F4.
Number 22A.
We are still in that third part in the candlestick order with love and mind. And we have done that subject from the point of view of truth in absolute Christian Science. Now today we take the part from B, from the standpoint of love in absolute Christian Science. When we see those parts A and B as having a different impact from the absolute level of Christian Science, the one with the impact of truth, the other with the impact of love, perhaps the very first thing we have to ask ourselves in order to get a categorized consciousness, we have to ask ourselves now, what is the difference if we see Christianity as love and mind from the point of view of truth and from the point of view of love? What is that big difference? That big difference we see at once when we consider what were the four main points in from the point of view of truth, A, and we could see there that it had always to do somehow with getting rid or resolving, so to say, an opposite belief. Truth is always that which takes care of an opposite belief. Here, from the absolute standpoint, it isn't so that it destroys the opposite belief, but it resolves the opposite belief into nothingness. So all four parts in A had to do either with sin, which is an opposite belief, or with sickness, an opposite belief, with death as an opposite belief, and with personal sense, the prince of this world, which is an opposite belief. So truth is taking care of that, not by destroying those four opposite beliefs, but by showing that they are here for the glory of God, and therefore can be seen as being resolved as elements that serve for the glory of God. That they are just indications that there is something very absolute and very divine going on, and that it is only a question of seeing it rightly, of seeing that we bring these opposite beliefs back to nothingness, to animal magnetism, and see that they have no self-existence and therefore no self-expression. So this part of truth is insofar very clear as we can say, well, it is that which takes care of those fundamental claims that mankind has, sin, sickness, death, and personal sense. Now, when we come to love, you will see that love hasn't anything to do with an opposite belief. That all these questions of sin, sickness, and death, and personal sense are dealt with. They are no more a question that have to be answered. They are no more entering, so to say, the consciousness, because from the point of view of love, love only sees the true idea, the right idea, the perfect idea, and because truth has already wiped the opposite beliefs away, there is just made room for only the positive, the holiness, so to say, of Christianity. It is that part which Jesus spoke as a sermon at the Last Supper, but without any ritual. It is just one big sermon about the standpoint of love that only sees its true idea, and therefore resolves everything into one. So from now on, we will not see anything about an opposite error, an opposite belief, which has to be dealt with, but just with that constructive, all-embracing idea of love. Now, I want to explain that standpoint rather in detail, or rather slowly, I want to say, in order that we really see the holiness of love. And so take first the main epitome for that whole part B and look at it and see if we find in here already an answer or at least the difference between the standpoint of A. We have here in science as Christianity, see, science as Christianity, that's the candlestick with that knot where it is the third knot of love and mind. So in science as Christianity, the perfect idea of love. Now, why do I write the perfect idea of love? Because we are at the standpoint of love and mind. You see, the perfect idea is mind from the standpoint of love. So you have there the category of love and mind. Love always having a perfect idea. Love never losing sight of loveliness. So that's the fundamental point of that science as Christianity. So that perfect idea of love, what does it do? See, what does it do? Now we could see in from the standpoint of truth, it did resolve sin, sickness and death and personal sins. Here, because it is from the standpoint of absolute Christian science as love, it has another connotation. Therefore, love here from the absolute standpoint has the function of doing what? Of uniting through love. This is now love in absolute Christian science. Of uniting through love all into one web of infinite relationship within the infinite one. Can you see that here love has another place value? Namely, it will show that when everything is wiped away that is not of the nature of God, and truth has done that, has resolved those beliefs, then nothing evil is left. And so one can see that therefore there is only one universe, that everything goes on in one universe, that everything is united in one universe, and so unites all in just one web of relationship, of infinite relationship, into the infinite one. So you get quite a high sense of love in absolute Christian science. Did I make myself clear about it? Three knots, the other tone. So I have to repeat it. And even if all would have nodded, I would repeat it. Because these are things that we have to be aware of, I would say, in which we have to culture ourselves. How shall I explain it in other terms? You see, we are learning the synonymous terms. That's fundamental for everyone. So we learn, among others, what is love. And when we go through the textbook and pick out all what Mrs. Eddy says about the synonymous term love, we come to a whole list of characteristic ideas that characterize love. You don't have just one idea that characterizes love. We have a whole list. And if we look at that whole list, we feel they are so different from each other, those ideas. What has, for instance, the idea of plan to do with fulfillment? What has fulfillment to do with embracing? What has embracing to do, say, with welcoming, with protecting? You see, that is when we have a whole list and perhaps learn them by heart, and that is perhaps a help, but it can also be a stumbling block, because we learn a list of terms, of isolated terms, and we can't see how they are linked together, how they function together, why they are all under one subcategory called love. Well, the reason is that love has many offices, that love has many offices within the whole model of being. It isn't the same if I have, for instance, love in divine science as Christianity, or if I have love, say, in the Christ order, on the level of Christian science, in the Christ order, where it appears after principle, life, truth, and then comes love, and then afterwards soul, spirit, mind. It has a different place value. That's the meaning and the importance of having that model of being. Because in that model of being, we learn that these synonymous terms, every box in that model has synonymous terms, and we learn that in every box, that synonymous term has a different tone, has a different office. And so, in this way, we bring order into this list of ideas about love. We see, well, certain qualities or ideas of love have their specific office in one of these boxes in the model of being. So here, we have an epitome in which that synonymous term, love, appears twice. You see? It appears twice. But every time it appears, or the two times it appears, it means something else. It means love, but in a different office. The different office that she gives here is first that love and mind in the candlestick order has a very definite office, namely that it says, look out from love and only see the idea of love. That's mind. Love and mind. From love, only see the perfect idea of mind. So that's the office of love there. Whereas the second one, love, in this epitome, is indicating love from the standpoint of absolute Christian science. In absolute Christian science, you know, in the model of being, that absolute Christian science as science is expressed through truth and through love. So love has here a different office than in the candlestick order. What is the office of love in absolute Christian science? The office of it is to show that love embraces all ideas, includes all ideas, brings the universe of ideas together into one, that it is that love which brings oneness into the universe, the oneness of being into the universe. So this is different. That's the second explanation. Is that clear? Uh-huh. That's clear. Wonderful. Wonderful. You begin to react so much better than 10 years ago. Yeah. I must confess, you know, that I made a remark in California. I said, it's funny, you are always so responding, and when I go to the East Coast and I say something, they don't move their face. And now you begin to move them. Yeah. So, excuse me if I have made that remark, but that's not something bad. It's just that it is a question that it that the one goes with it, huh? And that one is affirming that one understands what one has seen. Yes. So, if we take this epitome again, you can see the beauty of it. I always say you can see the beauty of it. I see it, and I hope you see it too, because, yeah. Now, if you send flowers to somebody, perhaps you send only roses, but sometimes you mix the flowers and send various flowers in one bunch. Well, you mix them, I hope, at least, so that they are really friendly, the colors are right, huh? that they blend, you see. Yeah. So that then you get the relationship of these various flowers that are agreeable, that are nice, that are beautiful, And in the same way it is with these ideas. One can see the beauty of such a sentence as it is stated here as an epitome. To me, they are not just an academical training, they are not just words put together just as I like them. They are speaking about categories. They are speaking about the relationship of categories. So I see, well, if I am in science as Christianity, therefore if I want to look at Christianity not from a religious point of view, not from a sentimental point of view, not from a churchy point of view, but from a scientific point of view, then I must see something very scientific. What is that scientificalness of it? Well, it shows that I'm here, I have the candlestick that says, look here, fundamentally in science, Jesus saw in science. He saw what? From the point of view of perfection, of mind. He only could see, from the point of view of love, he could only see love's own idea. Therefore, only ideas that are perfect, that are fulfilled, that they work in the plan of God, so I can see love and mind as a very wonderful sense of Christianity, showing that Christianity is composed or built up of perfect ideas. But if I see that, there is still something missing, namely, do I have to see these perfect ideas here and there and here and there and here and there? Or are they just interlocked into one web of consistency, into a oneness of being, so that I have a one Christianity, that Christianity becomes not thousands and thousands of isolated perfect ideas, but that they are all interrelated and put together into one whole. And I have even a higher sense of Christianity. And that which makes that unity is love in absolute Christian science. It isn't love in the candlestick order. Yeah, that's true. Can you see? Can you see? You get music, huh? You get a symphonic concept of it, not just the linear melody of things, but more and more you begin to see that these various categories are intertwined and intertwined. Always think about the core, say a core in music. Huh? The conductor has before him a score. Sorry, I left out the S. Yeah, a score, huh? We must think always in science as if you would read a score and not a linear melody. Simple melody just with one voice, huh? Just as we sing, when we sing, we only can sing in a linear way. We cannot sing at once, at the same time, various tones together. But an orchestra can do that. That's the purpose of it, as far as I know. I know nothing about music, but I know as much as that I cannot read the score. That I know, because I have not been trained in it. But in science, we must be trained in it to read the textbook, the Bible, as a score would be written. And this is the difficulty, because in music you can write those various levels on top of each other and read it vertically, as you go on horizontally. You always read vertically at the same time. In a book, we can't do that. The book, because of the printing is always linear. And so the difficulty in writing an idea like a score is really this, that the printing is linear and that the interpretation which we give should be like a score, should be at the same time vertically. This is what we have to learn, you know. So if in the last end you look at the last page of my epitomes, you see the score of it, of John, of the Gospel of John. And this is naturally the new age that comes upon us. I don't refer to the New Age people, but the new age that is coming in, so to say, with the middle of this century, in all various disciplines came in, that we have to think dimensionally. That's like a score. Huh? The moment you have dimension and have to think at once linearly and vertically, then you think structurally. This is a new training, and without this, naturally, we don't get the beauty of being. Just as it is a great difference if I sing a song, I have to do it linearly, and that is very different than if I hear a whole orchestra playing that thing, where all the various dimensions are coming in, and that naturally gives a much greater impact, and it's certainly much more beautiful. And that is what we have to learn. And that is what, even in theology, they begin to see that. They begin to see that they should be able to read the Bible symphonically. And if I can use that word symphonically for it, huh? Dimensionally also. And so, it is a little bit of a training that we have to go through, but we can't say, well, this is too complicated. Well, Jesus was a simple man. He talked always in simple words. Everybody could understand the simple words. He had a simple language. Did he have a simple language? I don't think so. For 2,000 years, we were trying to understand that simple language, and not even simple people could understand it. Or if it would have been so simple that everybody could understand it, we would have had another Christianity than what we had. It is not so that he was simple. And now when we see how John was reasoning about the mission of Jesus, we see that it wasn't so simple, that it was really very intricate. Can you say intricate? It is like a web, huh? That is a network where he is really having a hierarchy of levels of thinking, and was interweaving those hierarchies with each other. That's the way he was thinking. And so we do not something that is unknown or foreign to the spiritual seers. They always knew it. They did, Mrs. Eddy said, but it is a question if they knew it consciously. That's for her. She didn't answer and say yes or no. She said it's still a question if the prophets of old and the great seers of old knew the signs, or if they just felt the spirit of it. If they were just composing, as perhaps, I don't know, Mozart was composing as a little child. He could hear the most beautiful music and compose it. And for me, and I don't know if it's for the musical critics, if he actually knew what he was doing, that's a question. I don't know. I can't answer it. But it seems that as a young boy composing those wonderful pieces of music already, was not consciously conscious of the categories and of the signs of music. It was just a wonderful transparency. The same thing is true with Mrs. Eddy. We have all the indications that Mrs. Eddy did not know the signs in its structure that she wrote in the textbook, because we can only sense that she had a very, very fine spiritual sense and a spiritual transparency, so that she could correct year after year, could correct what was not right in the structure. That's why she changed the structure of the chapters, of the textbook. She changed constantly the flow within the chapter, constantly, just showing that she was listening spiritually constantly to the structure of being. So this is all a matter of the development of the Christ idea, which we see here evolving, and therefore, if we don't want to be backwardish and go forward and to be pioneers, and to be always in the forefront of the development of the world, we jolly well have to be open to the advancing age and the advancing ideas and methods of interpreting a text. Yeah, all right, we change here. Yeah.